We're doing in Yaakov, we're in Tractate Shabbat, the fifth chapter, page Nun Dalet in the Gemara, Chaf Beis, in the standard editions. We had learned the Mishnah about different animals that can go outside with different adornments, and the Mishnah had described that sheep may go outside in the public domain on Shabbat, kevulot. And the Gemara had explained that kevulot was that they would tie the tail downward so that the males wouldn't be able to mount them. And then the Talmud had expanded on why does the word kavul mean that? And then the Talmud had quoted from a conversation between Hiram, the king of Tzor, and King Solomon, where King Solomon gave him a gift of certain properties. And then Hiram was displeased. He came back and said, why did you give me these lands? These are lands Eretz Kavul. And from there we derive that the word kavul means bound. So the Talmud had asked, why is it called Eretz Kavul? So the Talmud brought one interpretation that they were bound, so to speak, wrapped up with gold and silver, the citizens of that territory. And so the Talmud asked, what's wrong with having citizens who are wrapped up with gold and silver? Why was Hiram displeased with those properties? So the Talmud had said that because they were wealthy, so they were pampered, and they wouldn't come to do the service of the king. There were taxes, and part of the taxes was that people had to show up certain days of the year to work for the king, and these people were not about to do that. So that was Hiram's complaint. And now we're continuing. Rav Nachman bar Yitzchak amar Eretz Chumtanaita. It was a land that was salty, that was dry, that was parched. Amai kaula kavul. So why was it called kavul? A person, when he was walking, his feet would sink into the ground. There were holes all over because it was so parched. You could sink your feet until the kavul, until the kavla, until the, I think the kavla is what we would call the ankle. The amri inshe ara me kavla d'lav de peri. So people used to call it the land that's kavla, that's bound up, that doesn't produce fruit. So that's why Hiram was displeased with this. When we'll get there in the book of Melachim, we'll have to understand why did Shlomo give him such properties. He meant to give him a gift. Hiram had helped him build the temple, so he was giving him a gift. So why, in fact, did he give him those properties? We continue. The Mishnah had said, you don't let animals go outside akud. What is akud? Amar Rav Yehuda, akud, akedat yad v'regel. Akud means that they would bind a hand and a foot together of the animal, so it wouldn't run away. Ki Yitzchak ben Avraham. Now we understand what happened at the akedah, at the binding. Like Isaac, the son of Avraham. I don't know if you ever imagined it, but the Talmud is now telling us that akedah means that Isaac had his hands tied behind his back to his feet. That's how he was lying on the altar. Ragul, it said animals are not allowed to go outside with their foot doubled over. Shlo yakof yado al gabez rovi iksho. If you've seen Arabs with camels, you'll see sometimes they do this. They bend over the arm or the hand or the leg onto itself and they tie it so that it cannot straighten out that leg or that hand and it can't run away. So these are things that are prohibited. You may not let an animal go out that way. Sometimes the concern is that the rope that you've tied on there will come off and then you'll end up carrying it in public domain to tie it on the animal again. We're up to the next Mishnah. Parato shel Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. So we have Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah. What do we know about Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah? He was a Kohen. He was 10 generations from Ezra, who was also Kohen Gadol in the beginning of the period of the Second Temple. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was appointed Nasi during the period of Rabban Gamliel and Rabbi Yoshua. So that puts him in the period of Rabbi Akiva. So he's post-Second Temple, right? He was Nasi together with Rabban Gamliel. They shared the post in the period that's about a century after the destruction of the Second Temple. Why do I say a century? I shouldn't say a century. That's not true. A few decades afterwards, because Rabbi Akiva was a disciple of Rabbi Yoshua and Rabbi Eliezer, and Rabbi Yeshua and Rabbi Eliezer were both alive during the destruction of the Second Temple. So Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah was a youngster. He was 18 years old, but he was very, very smart. And so he became, as we learned earlier in the Inyan Yaakov, he became the Nasi at a very young age. And the Mishnah tells us he was very wealthy, and his cow, Haita Yotzat Biltzua Sheben Karnea, would be seen walking around on Shabbos with a red ribbon between its horns. Sometimes they would adorn the animals. The cows would sometimes go out with red ribbons between their horns. And the Mishnah says, you're not supposed to let your cow walk around that way. So the Mishnah says, and even so, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah would let his cows walk around that way. Shelo biltzon chachamim. And the rabbis were not pleased with it, and he did it anyways. That doesn't sound so good. So the Gemara asks, v'chada paraha v'elei, wait a second. Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah had one cow that walked outside. The Mishnah describes it as his cow. What does that mean, his cow? We have on tradition that every year he would tithe, and his tithe would be 12,000 calves. That's the tithe. So he had 120,000 calves born on an average year. Or more accurately, 120 plus 12,000, 132 somewhere. No, 120,000 calves that were born. So he had many cows. What does that mean, his cow walked around with a red ribbon? He had herds and herds of cows. Tana, so we quote a braisa. Lo sheloita, you're right, it wasn't his cow that was walking around with a red ribbon. Ela shel shechinato ita, but it was his neighbor. Umitoch shelo michaba nikret al shmo, but it was his neighbor. And when people saw his neighbor does that, so people started saying, you see, his neighbor does that, he must approve. And he should have stopped her. He should have told his neighbor, you can't do that. And he didn't. So people used to say, it's Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah who allows you to go out with a red ribbon. And this is a very tricky thing. People tend to attribute things to rabbis, even though they're inaccurate. And if you think about it, you'll realize that you've probably done the same. You see, there's a story of one of the leading rabbis in the United States in the past century, whose wife did not cover her hair. A well-known story. They used to come to the rabbi and ask him, do women have to cover their hair? And he'd say, yes. And they'd ask him, and what about your wife? And he'd say, ask her. What was he supposed to say? Obviously, she refused. And he wasn't about to divorce her over it. And there are many stories like that, where people assumed that if they saw something happening, then the rabbi approves it. It doesn't exactly work that way. So, nonetheless, the rabbi has to take that into account, and he has to try and ensure that people are not misled based on his actions or his family members' actions. And that's a tricky balance. Over here, people saw Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah's next-door neighbor was letting her cow go out that way, so people all said, you see, Rabbi Elazar ben Azariah permits it, when in fact he did not. But he wasn't, you see, the rabbis didn't agree with him. They held that he should have been more forceful in ensuring that it didn't happen in his neighborhood. Yes?
What do you learn from this lesson on the kind of microscopic everyday level? I mean, basically that shouldn't take granted that because someone apparently seems to be doing something that's maybe what they really want to do or how they think or what they do other part of the time or something like that, or is there a deeper lesson to be learned here?
I think we, from our perspective, definitely have to learn the first lesson you've said. But the first lesson is very important, meaning people like to learn halacha from what they've seen a rabbi do. And it says that we don't really know how to do that. You have to, the discussion really begins in Tractate Chulin, where the Talmud has a discussion about Beit Shan. Is Beit Shan part of the land of Israel or not? And the Talmud quotes a quote that Rabbi Meir ate a vegetable in Beit Shan, and he did not tithe it. He did not take off Trumos and Maestros. So the Talmud says, from that, Rabbi heard that quote, and he permitted all of Beit Shan. He told them, now that I have an affirmation that Rabbi Meir held that Beit Shan is not part of Israel, you're all allowed to eat without tithing. Now, don't assume that the Beit Shan in the Talmud is the Beit Shan of today, even though it might be. But the Talmud spends a page and a half asking, how did Rebbe know that? He had a quote of a story. Maybe there were many details he didn't hear. And if he didn't hear them, then how could he give such ruling? So before the Talmud is willing to accept that we're going to give a halachic ruling based on a story, the Talmud analyzes the story from many, many different angles. It spends a page and a half analyzing how did Rebbe, in fact, verify that this was really Rebbe Meir's intention. Maybe he tithed it before when people didn't see. Maybe he knew it was pre-tithed. The Talmud goes through many angles of observation and asks, how do you know that? When we see someone do something, we're quick to assume. There's a famous story that there was a Hasidish Rebbe in Muncie who sat at the table and they had two boxes of orange juice at the table. One was a Golden Flow and the other one was New Square. So he asked for orange juice. They passed him the Golden Flow. He took it, he put it down and said, I want the other one. So all the Hasidim heard this and they stopped buying Golden Flow orange juice. So after a few weeks, the head of Golden Flow gave him a call and said, what's wrong with my orange juice? So the Rebbe says, nothing wrong. So he says, then why all the Hasidim are saying you wouldn't drink it? He says, no, they passed me the box and I saw it was empty. So I put it down and I said, pass me the other one. But that doesn't change that what the Hasidim saw was that Golden Flow is no good, New Square is good. So that's where it says in Halacha, we're not good enough to look at what a rabbi does and say, now I know the halacha behind it. I will learn halacha from his actions. It says he can't do that anymore.
We need to check what we see by asking maybe questions to double check.
Right.
We need to stop maybe jumping the gun. And also we need maybe to verify the facts from more than one different source. Is there any other lesson in how we can be better at learning from what the rabbis are doing about the
rabbi? The general, I think that's more than enough. There's a... there are other lessons, meaning that the Talmud is also teaching a lesson to the rabbi. You have to be careful what people see and what people infer. But I don't think every person has to take that and live by that. Back to our Gemara. Rav, we got 2 minutes. Okay, we'll do one more line. Rav, Rabbi Chanina, Rabbi Yochanan, Rabbi Chaviva, Matnu b'kuriseda Moed. Throughout Moed, when you see this pair, Rav and Rabbi Chanina, Rav Yochanan, Rabbi Chaviva, Kol Ke'azuga Chaluf Rabbi Yochanan, Ma'ale Rabbi Yonatan. When you see this pair, you should know that you should switch Rabbi Yochanan for Rabbi Yonatan. And they quoted the following: Kol Mishe Efshar Limchot Banchei Beto Velo Micha Nitpas Al Anchei Beto. When a person can guide his own family to doing what's right, and he does not, so he is held accountable. Notice the starting point: when a person can. A person is not supposed to assume, I'm the father, I'm supposed to teach halacha in this house, so what I say goes. No, doesn't always mean that people are going to listen to you. Sometimes if you argue with your teenage son, it'll backfire. So when a person can, then he's held responsible. The key point being when. And that takes a lot of thought. One of the first classes we have in our class on the Jewish home is about the importance of doing things in a pleasant way, and that in the home you cannot apply religious pressure. People have to feel comfortable. So a person has to really analyze whether he can or cannot. And very often a person would do well to think a lot before saying something. I can tell you that my wife and I will sometimes discuss something that's going on with one of the kids for a week or two before we react. Sometimes if you're smart, you analyze when's the right time, who's the right parent to react, do you have to react, maybe it's just a passing phase. It requires thought. So the question is, can you? The Mishnah, the Gemara says, if you can, then you're held accountable. Ban Sheiro, sometimes a person can teach his own city. So then nitpas ba'alan Sheiro, then he is held accountable for his city. And again, that takes a lot of thought. It doesn't mean that you will succeed. You can say something. A person came to me and said he's from a community that there's a big machlokas whether they have to undergo giyur or not. And his community decided they're going with the rabbi that says they're all kosher Jews, they don't have to undergo giyur. And I said, but you realize that the chief rabbinate and many rabbis ruled that you guys have to undergo giyur again. And he said, yeah, but we're going with the other opinion. Okay. A second later, he says, and what do you say? I said, I say that if I had such a question, I wouldn't go to sleep at night. I would go to sleep at the doors of the Rabbanut, And the next morning, I would be the first one to knock on the door and say, you know, my whole life, I'm leading, trying to keep mitzvot. I want to make sure I got it right. If there was one rabbi who said I wasn't a kosher Jew, I would go and try to rectify that. Here you're telling me there are many? I wouldn't let that pass. Did anything happen? Nothing. The guy asked the question and then didn't follow through. Now, is it my responsibility? Am I supposed to run after them? The Gemara says, when you can. A person has to analyze very clearly, can I affect or can't I affect? Just because someone asked the question doesn't mean they're ready to hear the answer. That's, we'll pick up here, Bezachem, next week.